Shanti.
Let's begin. It's time for self-empowerment. So I'll just show you, the first few slides are just about where we're at the moment, right? We live in a world where there's just such a, you know, fast-paced workplace, many demands on us. I think you all can relate to this better than me, maybe. People are multitasking, and the brother mentioned yesterday about multitasking, but also, do you know that multitasking doesn't work anymore? Because when you multitask, you're using your left and your right brain, and you can't, because you're constantly switching from the left and the right, from the rational to the creative, or the creative to the rational, it confuses you and slows you down actually, it makes you tired. So they're saying multitasking doesn't work anymore. Then there's always a shortage of time, right? We never have enough hours in the day to do the things we want to do. And we work like machines, we are non-stop. If we finish that work, we come home, that's another routine. Finish at home, you go to work, there's another set of chores, so it's just non-stop. And what's happening to the mind? Our mind, as I said, is non-stop. Our mind is being hijacked. We actually lack focus. And I believe, like, why we have so many accidents in the world is because there is a lack of focus. Anytime somebody's had an accident, ask them what were they doing moments before the accident. And likely they were thinking of somebody else, their mind was somewhere else, they were worried about something. Yeah, so they were not present, they were not driving, they were not focused. Even when you're at the stove, you know, when there's an accident in the house, ask yourself, like, why? What's happening? And I think you know that, you know, as we think, so we create certain diseases. We say the dis-ease of the mind is what creates the disease in the body, right? So ulcers create, worry creates ulcers, tension creates skin rashes, actually even asthma, right? Asthma is created by tension. Fear, heart attack. And if you get angry a lot, then anger is actually connected with the liver. So you start having problems in the liver. Of course, negative thinking is all over, but primarily depression. Now, this is just a small list. So imagine all the other ailments. So don't think that I can carry on thinking how I want, because the first person it affects is you. Right? Even if you think I'm thinking bad for the other person, but no, the first person it will affect is you, in your mind, it will affect your body, and plus you're creating bad karma. So that's going to be something you'll have to pay for later. So there's really no reason to think negative. Actually, give me one positive reason. Give me one positive reason why you should think negative. Any positive reason? No. Think about that. I know you'll go and think about it and say, I want to tell Aruna this, this reason, but there isn't any reason. Okay, so four levels of stress, yeah? There is what we call, let's start from the bottom. So there's the physical, which affects the body, right? So there's tense muscles and, well, you don't have as much physical stamina. Emotional stress, where you get affected by what people say, so you're getting more into the feelings, emotions, and you think. Intuition is where you think that you're right, where you may not be right, you see, so you can't always trust your intuition. Mental, where we can't think straight, can't decide, can't discriminate, can't choose, right? And actually this is a growing thing, like if you're going to a supermarket now, how much choice is there? Even if you want to buy one shampoo, you have to walk the whole aisle to choose, right? First, maybe the brand, then the price, then is it right for your hair? I mean, it's endless. And then spiritual, right? So we are actually quite lost in this area, like, who am I? Who am I is a multi-billion dollar question. And what do I believe in? What are my values? My perceptions? How do I see the world? How do I see the cycle of time? So this is all to do with spiritual concepts. So what we are doing on a day-to-day basis is, she's got a t-shirt wearing fight, and he's got a t-shirt saying flight. Yeah? So she's going to fight and he's going to run. So anyway, I'll just explain this. I know you can't see it, but okay, so what's actually happening to us is when something happens to us, let's go back. So in the past, okay, say that you were out in the jungle trying to find your berries and nuts, and you know, you were trying to feed yourself. This is some, say, you know, 2,000 years ago. So if you happen to see a lion or a tiger, right, what do? You stand there and shake hands, or what do you do? Huh? You run, right? Unless you're really mighty and you would fight. So this is what they're saying. If you're strong enough, you fight with the tiger. And if you're not strong enough, then you flight, which means you run. You fly away from there, right? So this is called the fight or flight response. Now what happens is, now when we see fear or anything that seems like fear or stress, then the adrenaline is kicked off, and many things happen to the body, right? So when you detect fear, so your eyes become wide out of surprise. It's not just surprise, but so that you can see better, and you start getting more blood going to the muscles, especially the legs and the arms, to maybe fight. So if you've been eating something, then the digestion stops because all that energy is needed for the other organs of the body. Your breathing becomes faster, the heart is pumping more blood, right? I mean, if there's a doctor here, you know better than me. So these are all the responses that are happening in the body. But when there is that fear, say something happens with your boss or your mother-in-law or your wife, or you can't either fight that person, nor can you flight from there, nor can you run, right? So what's happening to all this build-up? All that energy that you got ready to either run or to fight, it's getting stagnated in the body. It's not being used. So you're creating those juices, but you're not really using them. And so this is then what creates a lot of the problems, right? So this is, yeah. So I've got dilated pupils, slow digestion, dry mouth, hearing loss. So these are the things that happen. But we get sick. And the theory is that the weakest organ gets attacked. The weakest organ in the body gets attacked. So we all have certain strong organs, certain weak organs. So if you're doing this over and over again, what's happening to the body? And this is how we fall sick. So a lot of it is to do with how we think, how we perceive a threat, and then how we manage that threat. You see? So all of this will be dependent actually on, again, the quality of our thoughts, the pattern of our thoughts. Okay, so whose responsibility is it? Is it somebody else's responsibility to manage my stress or manage my life, or whose responsibility? It's mine, right? Okay, so I'm going to show you something and you tell me, what does E mean, R mean, and O mean? What do these three letters mean? Huh? R is reaction, and E is what? Ego. Another word for reaction, positive. Response. Okay, so R is response. Huh? O is outcome, good. So what is E? Not emotion. Can't hear you, sorry. External something, okay. So it's actually event, okay? And this is a clue. Oh, it's not moving. it's supposed to be moving, right? One is hitting the other and the other is hitting back. Okay, so event plus response equals outcome. Okay, so events normally stay the same, right? You can't change your wife, you can't change your kids, you can't change your job, right? The situation more or less stays the same. That's the event. You want a different outcome, so you have to change your response, right? So what this is saying is that it's my ability to respond to situations that makes all the difference in the outcome. So we are the creators of our own stress, as we are totally responsible for the responses we create towards others and to the circumstances around us. Every response begins with our own thoughts and feelings, which are the seeds of our words and actions. So I always say that every now and then, check your feelings. In fact, I did this exercise for a month, like paying full attention to it. And every few minutes or every few hours, depending on what I was doing in the day. But I paid attention for 1 month to check my feelings. Because your feelings will let you know what's going on. In fact, your feelings are, you can say, the connector between your thought and the world. So don't just say, I feel good or I feel bad. No, try to zoom in. I feel good means what? I feel proud, I feel excited, I feel encouraged, I feel, you know, try to zoom in on the feeling. And if it's positive, do more of that. And if it's negative, then be conscious that I don't want that, so let me put something in its place. Okay, so there's something I say that there's two ways of making effort, okay? One is to push away the negativity, right? I don't want to be angry, I don't want to be poor, I don't want to be restless, I don't want to be irritated. This is like pushing. Or you can use the pull method, which is, I want to be powerful, I want to be peaceful, I want to be strong, I want to be motivated. So you're focusing on the virtue, because when you focus on the virtue, you're actually giving energy to the virtue. And if you focus on the negative, then you're still giving energy to the negative. You're still reaffirming that. Because the mind doesn't recognize the not. Yeah, I don't want to do that. The mind will see the image, and the image is of anger. So use the pull method, focus, and create the right feelings. And this is what we're trying to do with meditation. You create the right thoughts so that you create the right feeling. And it's the feeling that actually empowers you, motivates you, right, to do what you need to do. Because imagine like you wake up in the morning and you're not feeling good. Are you going to go to work? Are you going to talk to people nicely? Are you going to clean your house? Are you going to cook? No, so it's the feeling, right? So that's why we have to be in good feeling all the time. So anyway, try that. I leave it to you, but try to manage your feelings as well. So, yes, a fast car is difficult to control. A slow car is much easier to control. And I did emphasize this yesterday, and I'm going to emphasize it today, that a slow mind does not mean unproductive. It does not mean inefficient. Slowing down your thoughts. In fact, if you take time to slow down your thoughts, you actually get more done. Because as I said earlier, you are more focused. So when you are more focused, then all that attention goes into that and you're not distracted and you get the job done. Right? So if the mind is going fast, I mean, the reason why you drive a fast Ferrari, anybody has a Ferrari here? Don't be shy. Well, I don't have one, so Okay, so if you had a Ferrari, it would go very fast, right? Something like 300 kilometers an hour? Does it go that fast? Yeah, okay. So the only reason why you go that fast is because you have the brakes. You would never go that fast if you didn't have powerful brakes. Because you know you can brake at any time, you're going that fast. So that's what I mean. Like, we might think, oh, I'm so smart, I can think fast, I can do many things at once. But then, do I have the ability to stop and to slow down when I want? This is equally important. Otherwise, I can be thinking fast and doing things fast, and then, you know what? I'll end up in an accident, a relationship accident. And that's no good. So, slowing down your mind, which means you create few thoughts, but more powerful thoughts. Okay, so maybe you're aware of this, but I'll just put it to you. So now we're moving into what we need to do, right? This grid here is the success grid, right? So this is how successful you are, from zero to whatever, infinity. And this one here is the time grid, how long it takes. So every organization, right, goes through this, what we call the S-curve. So the S-curve is where, say you create a product, okay, whether it's cars or anything, absolutely anything, right, washing powder, chocolates even, anything. You create a product and you put it out there to the people, and what? I mean, after some time, people will stop buying it because now they want something different, they want something new. It's just psychology that people seem to want something new. So every company knows this, and every company knows really what this is, what is the length of time it takes for a product to become outdated, right? Okay. So what they start doing is, as this product, as they feel this product start to outdate here, they kick in a new product, right? So here it is, a new product. So it takes a bit of time for people to get used to it, and then it takes off. So, and it could be just simple, like as you saw with Kit Kat, right? What did they do? They put some orange in the Kit Kat. So it's the same Kit Kat, but maybe orange flavor. Or the wrapper has changed. Or with washing powder, they say, oh, now with blue crystals. You know, not white crystals, but blue crystals, right? So just minor changes they make, and then they're good to go for another little while until they have to kick in a new idea, right? Or a new invention. So these are I'm using this because it's so typical out there. I'm sure many of you know this. That we too, right, in order to keep ourselves empowered and motivated, and I speak from my own experience. I mean, as you know, I've been on this path a long, long time. And I've had to keep myself motivated because it is very easy to think, oh, I've done that, I'm doing that, now what, you know? So it's not necessarily motivation from the outside. It's motivation from the inside. And luckily, I think luckily I'm a creative person, so I come up with things of how to think. As I told you, I experimented with feelings, and I've experimented with other emotions. I practice a virtue for a week. I mean, even in our center, we encourage that we focus on certain themes or things. And it just keeps that newness alive. And then you also experience this knowledge in a different way, in a different light. So what I'm trying to say is, right now, okay, this is the question, yeah. This is the question. In which phase are you right now, right? So just look at your life, take a moment, right? So this is the birth, this is growth, this is maturity, and this is decline. Okay, birth, growth, maturity, and decline. And sure, there will be different things, and you're at different stages of those different things. But in general, let's take, for example, your spirituality. How are you comfortable with your spirituality? Where are you at? And how can you make it more, how can you make it serve you? How can you get spirituality to help you, to serve you, to make your life better? Okay, because that's why you've come here, so we'll focus on that. If you were at work, you might focus on your promotion. So this is important. I put this in here because I really think it's important that you weigh up your time, maybe every month, every 6 months, every year. You take a review of your life and say, okay, now what? Where am I? What do I want to do? Where do I want to be in a year's time? And then you set yourself some goals and you focus on that. Okay, so you focus, which means you apply what it needs to get there. Okay, if you're going on a journey, like somebody also mentioned the other day, right? Bangalore to Pune or whatever. So if you're going from Bangalore to Pune by road, right, you would fill up your petrol tank, wouldn't you? Like you wouldn't say, I'll start with half. No, because you know it's definitely going to take a full petrol tank and more. So in the same way, once you know where you're headed, then you start applying everything that's needed to get you to that destination. But this is only like the first stage, is to first find out where we're at. And if there was more time or a longer retreat, we could do a timeline exercise where you find out, right, from when you were born to where you are now, what has been your peak moments, what have been your low moments, and then to actually read that graph and see where you might be headed from here on. Okay, so this is not my chart. It's actually Joel and Michelle Levy, who actually live in Seattle, and it's their book, Living in Balance. But I like it a lot, and I think you will too. So see, most of us, what are we doing? We're mostly living in our comfort zone. But I'm asking you to be in your comfort zone, but to also expand that comfort zone. Okay? There's nothing wrong. I feel I'm living in my comfort zone. There's nothing wrong with living in your comfort zone, but I think we have to, as I said with the previous slide, bring newness and expand. And we have to increase that comfort zone, right? The boundaries of that comfort zone. So here you have levels of demands and challenges, right? So at work, you're given different tasks to do. And here is your level of skill set. So whatever, you're a programmer, you're an administrator, whatever, those are your skills. So you are given tasks, right, demands to suit that job, right, to suit those skills. Okay, so if the levels of demands are too high, right, like more is expected from you, but you don't have the skill set, right, this is full skill set, this is very little skill set, then there will be burnout. Are you all with me? If anybody doesn't understand, you can ask, yeah? Sab samajh rahe na? Okay. All right, next, right? If you're too qualified, but you're not being used enough, there's not enough challenges, then there will be rust out. You become rusty. Okay? And, yeah, so this is the happy comfort zone. But we also have to stay in our learning zone. In other words, if we are constantly learning and, you know, expanding our skill set plus learning from the demands and challenges, then we are in our happy zone. So again, coming back to us and spirituality, this is why on a daily basis we study. We have our daily morning meditation and our daily morning study. And it's important. I mean, yes, you can miss a day, but then you will feel like you've missed a point. You will feel like there's something, some food for thought that you are missing. And I like to I like to attend our morning sessions because I just feel there might be a point in that session for me that can help me really change my life. And if I've missed that session, I will have missed that point forever. So this is why I attend our morning meditations and morning class of knowledge. So this is, think about your life again, and this is where you want to keep yourself, right? In the learning zone, but parallel to the comfort zone. Yes, be comfortable, right? We're here to have a happy life, what we were saying yesterday. Not going to deprive you of having a happy life. But at the same time, make sure that you are learning things and increasing your spiritual tool set, your spiritual skill set to be able to deal with the demands of the world. And what I mean about this is your powers, right? I think some of you might have taken the Raja Yoga course, the 8 powers, power to pack up, power to tolerate, power to face, power to judge, power to discriminate, power to adjust, power to withdraw, right? There's 8 powers. And all of these are very practical and very useful to us in our lives. They can actually make our life happier for it. And actually what I want to say is we actually have those powers within us. So let's move to this. So here's the iceberg, right? And the wind is moving in this direction. And the water is moving in this direction. So which direction is the iceberg moving? Somebody's saying here, this way. How many say this way? How many say this way? And the rest of you? Don't know? Not sure? You're saying that way. Okay. Shall I tell you? Yeah? Well, it would move in this direction, right? Because the greater volume, the greater mass is below. So it's got nothing to do with the water or the air. It's to do with the mass, the volume of the iceberg, the size of the iceberg. So the greater size of the iceberg is under the water. Yeah? Are you agreeing now or not? Tick? Okay. So what does that tell us, right? There's a little portion at the top and a big portion at the bottom. So what does that tell us? So there's things that happen outside, what we already said, our responses to the events that happen outside. So that's physical, environmental, social relationships. Then there's a big portion that's underneath, which is the spirit or the spiritual, our mind, our thoughts, emotions, what we believe, right? We all have many beliefs. It's not just religious beliefs. We believe we can do it or we can't do it, or I'm a woman and I'm a female and I'm weak and I'm strong and whatever. We all have certain beliefs. Then we perceive certain things a certain way, right? So many ideas about perception. Maybe you're afraid to be alone. You perceive loneliness as people not caring for you, whatever. I mean, there's many things there as well. Each one of us has different ideas, right? We ask large group, we ask them to build a tower. Everyone's going to come up with a different idea of how to build a tower. And we might kill each other because, you know, my idea is better than your idea, right? So there's so many ideas and opinions. And then memories. We all have a lot of memories. And also, I think in Bharat, we believe in reincarnation. So we've brought memories from past lives as well. A lot of fears. So just think all of this thing under the water, under the surface, is actually driving us. Right? So for example, if you get angry at something, it's actually not that person. It's not that person's fault that you got angry. Think about it. It is something in you that made you get angry. So if you get angry, and one of the things anger is a need to control. Okay? So you want to control things. Because maybe your life is not in your control. So you're frustrated with that. Are you understanding? It's a very deep point. Because once it clicks, then you won't give your power away to these things outside. Yeah? Ask yourself, when you're angry, what is it that you're trying to control? And you will find that you're actually trying to control you or your life or something inside of you. Like your greed or whatever. There's something inside that you're irritated with, which comes outside externally as an irritation. Okay? Back to the greed, right? The greed. Why we want things from outside? Because we have not looked inside to find out what we have inside. Once I look to see what I have inside, I don't need those things from outside. We are content, right? Santushed. Absolutely content. So there's a lot of stuff underneath that needs processing, actually. And we can't blame the finger at somebody else. It's not the people, it's not the traffic, it's not the government, it's not the environment. No. You could have bad weather, but you could still be in a good mood. Because you decide to be in a good mood. Right? You don't let the weather or anything control you. So this is where we become masters of events and situations and time and even the emotions of others. And I always say, like, you see, I'm holding a remote, right? So if somebody presses your button, if somebody says you're really good, and you say, yeah, I'm really good. And if somebody says you're not good, then you become deflated. So, what? You know, like, are they holding the remote to my life? You know, they say something nice, I feel good, and if they don't, I feel bad. So this is what was responsibility, is I'm responsible for my emotions. If I'm saying that you're responsible, right, for my unhappiness, then what am I saying? That you're responsible for my happiness. If I say you made me unhappy, then what am I saying? You, only you and only you can make me happy. And we can't give this power to somebody else. Okay? So just to be mindful of what's happening inside. And again, meditation really helps us to look at ourselves and bring those inner changes so that when we come into action, we are very aware, okay? We're very mindful and we're very aware. So here's a few kind of tips and tools of these different states we're talking about. So physically, you can do meditation. And even like technically, the meditation helps because it slows down your breathing and your heartbeat and your blood pressure and all this, right? So technically, it helps physically. Physically, you can also do more exercise. And I also believe, like, we have to get the energy moving in the body. Yeah, so I know you might think that we sit and meditate all day. It's not like that. I mean, as you can see, I mean, this place is working like a machine, right? Everything is working on time. Those who need to cook, go to cook. Those who need to clean, they clean afterwards. Those who need to look at accommodation, whatever. I mean, everything is working like clockwork. Everybody's busy. And then mental. So I would say give your mind a mantra, but not one of those mantras that you have to get from a guru. Not like that. But you make up your mantra. And again, if there was more time, we could come up with some creative mantras, but you do this exercise later in the day, in your spare time, and give yourself. So there's quite a few say that I use, like I always say there is ease and flow in my life. I'm often saying this, there's always ease and flow in my life. There's abundance, there's benefit in everything, or everything's accurate, everything that's happening is accurate. So then whatever happens, you just remember that mantra, you see, so that you are again able to just calm your mind. Focus. Right? So again, really, I mean, even technically, just try and focus on one thing for a few minutes. And that means not just the eyes, but the mind. Like, how much can you just focus on that, right? Without being distracted. Without your mind, right? Turning to the coffee or to the pizza or... Just focus on that. Whatever you decide, just focus on that. And think only about that. So I think the best thing would be, as we have these focal points, you focus on the soul. What is the soul? Or you focus on an image of yourself, a peaceful, calm image of yourself. And say, what does that image look like? And visualize that perfect, calm image of yourself. Then they say do like mental exercises, which are more like this Sudoku and stuff like that, you know, puzzles and riddles. And I believe in that also, just to stretch the muscles of the mind, actually. And then emotions, right? There's the whole theory of EQ, which is emotional quotient, which means manage your emotions. So what is emotion? When we become emotional, emotion means energy in motion. So we're actually meant to be in feeling, not in emotion. Emotions are like anger. Emotions are like fear. Emotions are like irritation. But feeling is calm, peaceful, benevolent feelings. Positive feelings. Because emotion is more like this. It brings me up and down, right? Whereas feelings are more stable. You are moving along that feeling, but it's more stable. You're more in control of yourself. So this is the mindset we need to create, that I need to. As I manage the emotion, I'm more in a feeling state, in a being state. And then with the spiritual, all these words, right? Awareness, consciousness, being present, mindful. That's another thing I experimented for some time as well, is just be in the now. How can you just be in the now? So wherever, like you go from here out there, you're in the now, which means no thoughts of what just happened and no thoughts of wanting to do anything else. Then you go to the dining room. Again, just be present. Just eat and just be present. No thoughts, no worries about, oh, am I going to get my sleep or not? Or, oh, we wasted so much time there with Aruna just now. No. You know? Just be present. Just be in the present moment. And then values, right? Spiritual. Really exercise values in your life. Be ethical. And it's not just spiritual values. Now there are a lot of other values that the world is becoming more conscious of. So be mindful of all the animals, right, that are being eaten or being used for fashion or whatever. Be mindful of the environment, how many trees we're cutting down and how much rubbish we're putting into our soil or water. So these are values. Create some values, because this will make you passionate, actually. These values will make you a better person, and you will be, you know, you will feel better for it at the end, whatever is the end. And as the sister was, Binduben, right, was saying yesterday about finding purpose and meaning, it's so important. And they've done many research that, you know, when children leave home for university in the West, then, you know, mothers especially, they don't know what to do. They don't know what to do with their life, because their purpose was to feed the kids and, you know, to bring them up, and suddenly they've gone away to university and they lost their meaning. They lost their purpose. And many times, have you not seen this? In fact, two couples in the last 2 years. So one person dies and a few months later the other one dies. Because they were kind of living for each other, with each other. But as soon as one went, the other kind of lost hope. You see? So, oh yeah, and the other thing I'd like to say is Daddy Janki. You know, she came to England when she was 59 years old. She came from Pune to India, Pune to London when she was 69 years old. 59, sorry. Dadi Janki came from Pune to London when she was 59 years old. Now just think, would anyone think of starting a new job or a new career or any new project at that age? But Dadi suddenly got a new, you know, leash of life, because suddenly there was a whole world to be served. Yeah, it wasn't just Bharat. From 1971, service started abroad. And then she was traveling to all these countries and really selflessly helping all these people. And so for me, it's like that's her second life. That's why she's 103, because it's like she had a new purpose, a new meaning to serve the foreign countries. Okay, and then social, you know, do good to others. And I would say like volunteer or, you know, there's so much happiness and blessings received from doing good unto others. Because it makes you selfless, you know. There's an act of just doing things selflessly. We all do things for money, so that doesn't make you any different. But when you go out of your way to do things for nothing in return, it's just such a good feeling. And remember what I'm saying? You have to be in a good feeling, right? So do what you need to do to be in a good feeling. So help others. Volunteer. I mean, whatever is around you, like, help others. And then environment, right? It's not just literally sow and reap, right? It's not just planting the seeds, but yeah, do the good, respect the nature, the environment. And as I was saying yesterday in the med lab, only take what you need from the planet. Because the more you take, the more there is the demand. And then there has to be that supply created. So if all of us just minimize what we need from the planet, and remember what I said, like, it's your personal karma with that thing. So don't think, oh, what is another tissue going to matter, or another piece of plastic, or no, it's you. You're creating your karma with matter. So you be mindful of your relationship with matter and how much you are using and wasting. I know that in Starbucks in the West, you know, they say, take as much as, like these napkins, the paper napkins, they say, take only as much as you need. So when people go, they remind them, do you need 5 or 6? Or do you just need 1 or 2? So all of this makes us more conscious, you know. We start to respect everything and everyone. So I think all of you know, right, that we have four pillars of, or let's say 4 pillars in Raj Yoga meditation. And we say in Hindi, Gyan, Yoga, Dharana and Seva. And all these four, you can say, are like the 4 legs of a chair. So we need to be balanced in these four. If we don't have one, right, in order, then we're not balanced, like we're not comfortable. So there is the acquisition of jnana, right? So now I'm just sharing with you some of my experiences, as you've heard other people share. If you go to the center, you get other knowledge. So we acquire the knowledge, right? So the knowledge is like information. So this information has to be digested for it to become our blood, as I said yesterday, right? Let this become your blood. So what translates the information to your dharana is actually the yoga. When I take this information, what am I doing in meditation? I am, we say, regurgitating it, like a cow. Like a cow eats the grass, right? As he's standing, he eats the grass. Then he goes, sits down somewhere. And what he does is he brings it up from his stomach again and he chews it even more to make it a liquid. So here you're taking the knowledge, then you go and you sit somewhere for meditation, you bring up that knowledge again and you reflect on it. And you say, okay, how can I apply this to me? How can I, you know, help to make this, make a difference in my life? So the meditation puts you in, let's say, in another zone. Like Daddy said very beautifully yesterday, the silence, you see. Daddy was saying all of you are more like scientists and you have to be more silent. So in the silence, in the meditation, I'm able to process and see the point. Right, so we say, okay, like let's take the point of Lakshmi Narayan, and many of you had that frame day before yesterday. So, say for example, you look at the picture of Lakshmi Narayan, and yes, it's very beautifully decorated, and right, there's one at the back. So you look at that, and you say, okay, how does this apply to me? Right, we say that Lakshmi Narayan is our aim and object, the aim and object of perfection. A perfect man and a perfect woman. So how can I relate to that? What can I do to become like them? And if you look at Lakshmi, she's probably more prettier, right, than Aishwarya Rai, right? But why is it that we never have any impure or bad thoughts for her? Have you thought about it? And same with Narayan, probably more handsome than Hrithik Roshan, right? But why is it that you don't have, why we don't have impure thoughts for them? Yeah? And both of them are in their power. Lakshmi doesn't need to hold the hand of Narayan and say, oh, I need you. Yeah? Lakshmi is in her power and Narayan is in his power. So each one is full and complete. And this is what we need to get to, is our completion, our wholeness. Like we should have all the divine virtues and qualities in us. That's what makes us perfect. What is perfection? Perfection is when there's nothing missing. Everything that could be done is done. That is perfection. You see? So I've just given you some of my thoughts on how I would churn this Lakshmi Narayan picture. Do you see? So in the same way, you would take a point of knowledge and you would reflect on it, and then I would start applying that to myself and say, yes, I want to be like that. So there's the knowledge, there's the yoga, and then dharana, dharan karo, like bring it into your life. Right? Dharana is very close to dharma. So dharma is your religion. Dharana is your way of life. So your dharana needs to become your dharma. Your way of life needs to become your religion. Why do we say that there are no policemen, no lawyers, no judges in heaven? Because there's no one to correct anybody. Everybody knows exactly what they need to do. Right? And we always say kingdom of heaven. Do we say democracy of heaven? No. Or the capitalism of heaven? No. It's always, you know, kingdom of heaven. So there's a kingdom. There's a king and a queen. And everybody knows what they need to do. So this is what Raj Yoga is teaching us, is that each one of us knows exactly what we need to do. Once we know what we need to do, then we don't need the law and enforcement. Because we know what we need to do. You know, back at your company also, like, if each individual is responsible, right? In fact, there is this story of this young man, this is some years ago now, so maybe 15, 18 years ago. There was a man who inherited his father's business in Brazil. And his father had a different way of handling the business, and he had a different way. So when he came into power, he decided to, you know, change some things. Because he's young and he's educated, and he thought, let me try some new things. So what he decided to do was he said to the his HR people. He said, look, I'm going to do things differently from my father. And so he said, first of all, you give them, ask the employees what time they want to work. Give them the freedom to work their hours, right? So not that they come 9, they leave at 5, no. Ask them when they'd like to work, so long as their job gets done. That was one thing. Second thing, he said, leave all the stores open. I don't want them locked. And already there was a 5% theft rate, right? So 5% chori, right? Hotiti. So he said, leave the stores open. Okay. Then thirdly, he said, overalls, right? So they had to wear only one color overalls. I don't know which color, but it was only one color. He said, give them a choice of which colors they want to wear. So, basically giving the employees more freedom. Okay, so the HR executed all these instructions. And then, do you know what happened? So basically, yeah, they chose their hours, but they really stuck to their hours. Nobody was cheating, right? Nobody was coming later than they said or leaving earlier. You know, because now they were, we say, autonomous. Yani apne aap karna padta tha. So they were more self-responsible. Overalls, they had a big discussion, this and that, and then they themselves decided, no, one color is fine, and I guess this color is fine. So now they were wearing those overalls with love. And then the theft rate, right? Can you believe, even after the stores were open, the theft rate was still the same, 5%. So those who were stealing were still stealing, but there weren't more just because the stores were open. So what is this saying? This is saying that when we become more self, directed, self-motivated, then we can create like a kingdom of heaven. And this is the case with all of us right here in the Brahma Kumaris. Like each one of us is asked to be responsible for themselves. That's why dadis can lead with love. Now, yes, there may be one or two that, we say, teda ho jata hai. And then, yeah, they are called up and they are, given some advice, and maybe sometimes they're told, well, you don't fit in, you might have to leave. So, but mostly, 99%, everything is handled with love and care. And only when that doesn't work, then we apply the law. So this comes back to our dharna, okay? And then the last aspect of seva. So what will happen? Like if you already feel like you are benefiting, right? And you have so much happiness, you cannot but tell others about it, right? So for example, if say there's a sale somewhere. I don't know all your department stores, but I don't know. Name me a department store. Huh? D-Mart. Okay, yeah, good, D-Mart. Okay, so you have a D-Mart in maybe all the cities. So there's a D-Mart sale. So the mothers, the women go to the D-Mart and they find that something is on special offer. Would you not phone somebody else, your friend, and say, hey, you know what? There's a special offer in D-Mart. Why don't you get it there? You would do that, right? Yeah. So this is the thing. When you're benefiting from something, you would immediately tell somebody else. Or you hear a good piece of music and you share it with somebody else. Or you see a good movie, you say, okay, you know what? You got to look at that movie. Like anything that you benefit from, you want to share with others. So this is exactly the case here. Like when we have benefited so much, then we naturally serve, yani we naturally tell others. And this is the aspect of seva, is each one. And I've seen this, because I started in London very early when everything started. So I have seen how the seva has spread all over Europe and Africa and North America, South America. I mean, I've been observing. I went to a few places myself, actually, but generally I've been seeing how things just spread. In fact, where I am in Kuwait, one lady from Kuwait, a Kuwaiti Arab, she had come to Oxford, England, for a retreat at our retreat center, and it was a Living Values in Education retreat. So it was a retreat all about how to bring values into education, and she was running a school. And so she came, and then after the retreat, she said, "But I feel there's more to this knowledge. You've just shared with us values, but I feel there's something else." So Sister Jenti was there, and Sister Jenti said, "Yes, you're right, and there is a meditation course." And she had kept 2 days to go to central London and do shopping, everything for her kids. But she decided not to go shopping, and she decided to do this whole crash course in Raj Yoga meditation. So all day, one sister was with her 2 days and gave her the whole course from beginning to end. And then when she went back, overnight, there was overnight transformation. And she's the one who started the service in Kuwait. And then Dadi sent me to kind of be with her and, you know, give her company. And I remember when it was just two of us. And even that has grown now, where we now actually need a bigger house. We have a big house, but we need a bigger house because the service is just growing. So you can see how really when somebody benefits, you will naturally share that with others. But the point is, all this has to be balanced. That's the other point. It's not that you just like gyan, but you don't like yog. Or you like yog, but you don't want to put it into your life, right? No dharma. No, all four have to go together. And I thought this is very interesting, right? We normally use the picture of the Trimurti, right? Brahma Vishnu Mahesh, or Brahma Vishnu Shankar, Brahma Vishnu Shiva. So this can be easily applied to us, actually, right? In terms of the theory of our success. So, yeah, sorry about that. So basically, for sustained growth, right, we need to abandon the past, right, which is more like the Shiva, preserve our future, or preserve our assets, and that is more the Vishnu, and then become ruthless and kind of get rid of and clear in order to innovate, right, which is the Brahma. So in your life as well, you can look at this. What is it that you need to get rid of and discard? What is it that you can keep with you, which is good, which is working for you? And thirdly, what is it that you need to initiate and create? Do you see? And this again takes time and reflection, so maybe use this afternoon for all these exercises. But in order for me to be empowered, okay, and I'm talking about empowered, I need to be feeding myself new information, new food. And new food means like a fresh meal. Like, if you ate food from 3 days ago, would that give you nourishment? No, right? So you want to be eating a fresh meal every day. And so here too, you need to be giving yourself this new knowledge, new experience, let's say, every day. So all of us had breakfast this morning? Anybody here didn't have breakfast? Good. Why did you eat breakfast? Nasta kyun khaya? Huh? Energy, yes. And if we didn't feed you, you would be sleeping now, right? So, you eat to give yourself physical energy. So this is power, right? Food is power. So we say there's food for thought. What is good food? What is good thoughts? These are empowering thoughts. Right, we're all more conscious not to eat junk food. So what is junk food? Right, fried and whatever, packeted food and lots of carbohydrates. And so in the same way, what are we feeding the soul? How do we empower the soul? We empower the soul by creating powerful thoughts. This is how we empower the soul. So if you think you are weak, you will be weak. But if you think I'm powerful, you become powerful. Yes, really, you do. Once you say that you are powerful, you become powerful. Do you see? So basically, every day, imagine if every day you were exercising, I'm powerful, I'm powerful, I'm powerful. You would start to believe it, and your body would start to resonate, and your life would also start to work for you. Because you're powerful, you deserve a powerful life. Okay, so this is in your hands to create a new life, a powerful life. In fact, I have a whole another theme that I've also been practicing for the last year and giving talks on that is creating your reality. We are master creators of our reality. We can create the life that we want. So I always say there's enough money in the world, right? Why isn't it coming to me? Because I don't feel I deserve it. Huh? I'm not attracting it, exactly. Okay? And also there's maybe the fear. What would I do if I have so much money? Yeah, I might have to give it to my relatives. I don't want to do that. So, if you feel you deserve, it will come to you. It's the law of attraction. So really you can create, and we practice this a lot in Kuwait. Like, in fact, they're probably watching now. Some of them are watching the streaming. So, when you create a thought, right? I want this to happen. Somehow from somewhere, honestly, it happens. Either you get the time, more time to do it, you get the help from people, you get the money. Everything, everything conspires to help make it happen. And this is what's amazing. So I really, you know, if there's anything you want to take away from here, that is, you can create whatever you want. And it's in your hands. Don't leave it for somebody else. But main thing is you have to feel inside that I deserve. And this is the whole aspect of self-respect. Because the universe will also say, give it to this one. Because they know how to look after it. They know how to take care of it. So the universe will also say, give it to this person. They will value it. You see, but you have to create that energy of deserving, of attracting. It's like you're listening to, let's say, a pop station, you know, musical pop station. But now you want to listen to BBC. What do you have to do? You have to change your channel, right? So if you're constantly thinking, I don't deserve, or nothing works around here, nobody's good enough, everything's so bad, then you want something good to happen in your life? Is that possible? No, you have to change your channel. Change your channel here, change your thinking. Tune in to that which you want, and it will come to you. Tune in. Live as though it has already happened. Live abundantly. Like I always say, does everybody in this room have enough money for today? Right? Here you don't have to pay anything, but imagine if you were living, you have enough for your roof, you have enough for your food. So are you not rich? You're rich, right? So every day, live it like that. I'm rich, I'm rich, I'm rich. I can afford, wow, I can afford this meal. Wow, I can afford AC, fan, heating, whatever. And you create that, you know, abundant consciousness. Really, it really works. Okay, so just one or two more slides. Yeah, so I think this is interesting too. So how can we make things happen? I think it's quite explanatory. We need focus, the will, right, wanting to do it, and capability, like capable skills. So So if you have focus, if you have a capability, yani kuch kala, and you have focus, yani dhyan, kuch kala hai aur dhyan hai, then you could do it, huh? Shayad kar sakenge. That's here. If you have a capability and you have the motivation, you may do it. You might do it. Okay? And if you have focus and will, then shayad karenge, you would do it. But if you have all three, which is here, then you will definitely do it. So when it comes to our life, we need the skills, we need to focus, and we need the motivation of why we should be doing it. If anyone is missing, it won't be complete. So that's why it's so important to understand for yourself why spirituality, meditation, higher set of values, higher principles, all these things are so important. And then you will do it. You can apply this to anything actually, even your hobbies or whatever. Okay? But think about this and... Okay, this I think we've talked about quite a bit. Okay, so 60-day challenge, right? So this is something all of you can be thinking about, right? So every day you can be working on traffic control, right? There's lots of apps. There's also Just a Minute app. You can download that, and there's music played every hour. And you can also choose the music, it's Hindi music or instrumental music. Okay, and then daily, so this is like every hour, and then maybe every day you can meet at break times or lunch times to have some meditation or discuss something. Once a week you might, like in some of these, I know IT companies, they have these once a week gatherings where they take a topic and they discuss on that, values at work. Monthly, you might want to do something similar, do a workshop or even have like a one-day retreat or visit the center, ask the center, can we do something at the center? And generally speaking, yeah, promote values at work. So what this is like maybe you just decide that this month we're going to focus on trust or cooperation or something like that. And all of you focus on that one quality so that you're helping each other. So say for example all of you are going to focus on cooperation, right? Then it just makes people more aware. Okay, no, let me help. The virtue is cooperation, so let me help, right? And it just increases that energy of cooperation. And again, this really works. And we use this in our centers as well. Different centers have taken this up as well. In fact, it was a UN project we did. But that was some years ago, where every month, all of our centers focused on one virtue. And then we fed back to the UN, our office at the UN, and they collected the data and they presented it to the United Nations. So, yeah, this is a quote from Henry Ford. If you think you can, you are right. And if you think you can't, you're also right. Yeah? Because you are the one that will make it happen. So this is my blog. I think some of you know. So you can follow the blog if you want. And there's meditation commentaries on there. And I'm trying to add more things, but there's just not enough time. And there's also, yeah, a free download of one of my books, which is Conflict Resolution. So this is good for people at work. There's lots of tips and tools on that. So you can download that book and print it and or just have e-version. And okay? So I'll end here. I've left a few minutes if anybody wants to ask any questions. And then we can finish. Any questions? Sorry? Either choosing or choosing. Up mic, Dengue, please. I can't hear. Either choose it or?
You have only one choice. You are not given any choice.
Either choose it or choose it. Okay, yes. Yes, true. Anybody else? So you're all good then, you're all like ready, right?
Okay.
For your new life? Good.
Om Shanti. I am Sandeep. I came from Faridabad, Haryana, and got one question here that I keep wasting such events organized by NGOs and companies, corporates as well. And I feel the most percentage of connection is with this event, and last year I attended in Gurgaon, ORC. So my question is that wherever I go for spirituality, for peace of mind, for building up connection with the society, with the social work, so my brain, my mind always find out the reasoning first, logic first. I'm a computer background person, so logic should be there. So my mind always find out the logic, the validity of what you are communicating to me or what communication I am getting. So if I do not find logic, I get disconnected with those things. So is this a valid thought, or I should not find any logic when I come to such conferences? So this is my question. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So firstly, you're right. You're absolutely right, right? You should validate your logic. At the same time, and, right, you need to be open to new experiences. Because things about spirituality, we cannot convince you or prove to you or can't give you facts or figures. You see? So, connecting with God, is there a God? Connecting with Him. About me, I'm a soul. Or the experience of peace. All these are like not tangible things. You see? So for that, you have to be open, and it's only when you have an experience will that then be logical for you. So that's when the right brain kicks in, right? The creative. And then the left brain has to believe the right brain, because the experience is more powerful than the logic. Is that okay?
Thanks, sister. At first, warm regards for your devotional speech. So, being an atheist, I believe in spirituality, but I have a question. Like, as you said now, there are no cops and police in heaven. Okay, so I couldn't understand that. So, because I have not in heaven, so how it is.
Okay, so back to what logic tells me is there shouldn't be cops and police and in heaven. This is what my logic tells me. Yeah, back to this brother's question. Because when were the cops, the police, the judges, when was the law created? The law was created when we started doing things not according to our values. When we started breaking our inner laws, that's when people started needing to control us. You see? So when we all become powerful, then we don't need a world where people will manage us or control us by law. That's what I mean about there will be a world in which every single person knows exactly what they need to do. You know why? Because we are all masters. In the golden age, in heaven, we are all masters. If somebody has to give me some advice, I'm not a master. So each one will know whatever our position is, and there are many positions. But each one will know exactly what they need to do in their position. Is that answering your question? Or you had something else? Yeah. So this is what I'm saying. We all need to come to that point where we guide ourselves. We tell ourselves what we need to do so that somebody doesn't have to rule over us. You see? See, in the golden age, we have Lakshmi Narayan, but there's not the feeling that they're ruling over us. They are like our ma-bap. They are like our carers. Not like they're bossy and controlling us. It's not like that. That's not the relationship. You see? So here, like now with the dadis, right? It's with love. And we accept them as our leaders. We accept them as our seniors. And it's that natural relationship. Okay?
Om Shanti, what is the law of attraction? Please explain that.
Law of attraction is when you attract towards you that which you are thinking about. And it can work both ways. So if you think of a fear, okay, like some women do fear being attacked or raped or whatever. And so there is this research done that, yeah, if you've been having those thoughts, then you will attract that energy. And those who have other more positive, empowering thoughts, they attract those things towards themselves. So it's a law. Law meaning as you put out, so you get back. That's the law.
So is it proved?
Well, there's a lot of stuff on the internet. There's a lot of stuff, yeah. But of course here we don't want to, there's nothing wrong with money, but we also realize even if you had more money, would you be happier? So here it's not that we want to necessarily attract money, but we want to attract a happy life. Or we want a peaceful life. And that will automatically include having money and comfort, you see? So we want to go for the bigger picture and not just specifics. Yes?
Om Shanti Didi. First, I would like to thank you for such a good session and enlightening us with such a good session. So really this is eye-opener for us. And first of all, I would like to express my feeling. What I feel, this place is a heaven. This whole Shantivan is a heaven where there are no cops, no lawyers, and where I'm experiencing a totally a different world which is not present outside this boundary. So what I feel, the kind of environment, the kind of family feeling that I am getting here, and the values which has been taught to us within 1 or 2 days has been an eye-opener. I haven't learned this lesson in schools or colleges. So I just wanted to ask a very big question or just a small question. Can this values or the eye-opener lessons can be introduced in our schools in a way so that it can help a lot to liberate people from the sufferings that we are suffering now? So that's my question.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So yeah, there is a whole curriculum called Values in Education. And actually the Brahma Kumaris had started this project maybe now 20 plus years ago. And so I know this is all being recorded, but I'll be diplomatic as possible. So Brahma Kumari started the project, but then what we found is that when it went into some schools, they felt that it's the ideology of the Brahma Kumaris. you see. Together with values, they thought it's also ideology. So Daddy Janki actually took a decision and said, okay, make this separate from the Brahma Kumaris. And so there is a whole committee set up which is separate from the Brahma Kumaris, but Brahma Kumaris gave birth to the project. But since then, there are many people who are not Brahma Kumaris who are also part of that. There are trainers and many things. It's all over the world now. And so it's a separate entity, but it's called Values Living, LVEP, Living Values Education Program. So you can Google that as well, and that's happening. And then you can have trainers come over and train the teachers of how they can include values into the curriculum. So in fact, this sister from Kuwait who started the center, she came for her training about 15 years ago. Actually, she's left the body now. That's why I'm talking in the past sense. She developed cancer and left her body. But she's the one who started the Seva in Kuwait.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anybody else? I think that's enough.
Just to add on to the, I think what the brother has said, I think we are really blessed to have you here, and we are all really fortunate
to be
part of this session, I think.
Thank you.
I think there are so many questions which are actually coming to my mind, but maybe at this point of time, I will just to respect everybody's time. You did mention about having some karmic account with the matter as well. So, of course, if I'm using, say, 5 napkins, or if I'm using 1 napkin, still I'm doing...
If you're using what?
5, you said, tissue paper.
Yeah,
matter. And if I'm still wasting one tissue paper, still I'm creating some kind of karmic account? Am I not?
You are, but, yeah. So, at least you're reducing your karmic burden, right? So at least you're only using that which you need. And then out of that, then you try to, even minimize that. So now I've seen actually many videos that are coming out of India, which is where people travel with their steel bottles, and, you know, people are encouraged not to use plastic bottles and things like that. So you are, but at least you're reducing, and then with time, you reduce that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Excuse me, I have one question. Can I ask that?
Where are you?
Yeah, sorry.
Why don't you stand up so they can
see? Om Shanti.
Yeah.
So, one of my relatives is a firm believer in karma. She's no more, but she was a firm believer. And so she faced physical abuse at home. But she never voiced it out because she thought it's her karma and she can't escape it and she has to fight it. Now, some might consider this a noble thought or a mature thought, but isn't this also harmful in various ways? Like, such kind of acceptance justified, or she shouldn't have thought that? Like, what is your opinion?
Definitely. She should have voiced up. And we believe, I mean, why we tell you about karma is for two reasons. In fact, karma is one of the main lessons of our meditation course, both in India and abroad. We also introduce karma in all the centers, right? In Europe, North America, Middle East. Because what karma does is it teaches you that you have choice. You see? Why we mention karma is not just this has happened to you and you're here, right? So it's not just you have to keep taking the abuse. No. So now you have choice. If you know that you got here by doing this, then where do you want to be? And you make those choices. And you take the power into your own hands. If you have choice, you have power. So this is how then we start to change our thoughts, start to change our words, start to change our actions, and then recreate a new set of karmic accounts for ourselves. Plus, as you do the course, you will find out more, but as we sit in yog is that light from God, which is like a laser light that actually helps to clean some of the karmic burden. That's also why we say tapasya. Not tapasya karo, right? Because what? The tap, the heat of that yog, it helps to dissolve some of that karma. So imagine if you're doing that every day. So things may happen to you, but it's not as big as it would have been if you weren't having the yoga. You know, जैसे हम कहते हैं ना, वो सुली से काटा हो जाता है. Like a crucifix turns into a thorn. Some big event, some major catastrophe, you've settled it with just a little. Anyway, karma is very interesting. Don't get me started on it now, but I definitely encourage you to take the karma lesson at the meditation center. But yeah, anybody who's enduring anything, you shouldn't just think it's your karma and that's it. No, you have full power to change what is happening by making other choices. Okay? That's a good note to end on, actually. Right? All right, so just relax. And you can look in the center of Brahma Baba's forehead, which is the seat of the soul. So right now I'd like you to create a very powerful thought for yourself. I'd like you to initiate, to create something new for yourself. To give this gift to yourself of creating a new way of thinking, a new way of being. And in this gathering, in this powerful gathering, when we all have the same thought, we give each other that courage. And now I'd like you to visualize you planting that thought into your life. And I'd like you to visualize that it's actually bearing some fruit. So visualize yourself as that powerful thing right now. So if you want to be a more patient person, visualize yourself right now as a more patient you. See yourself in your life with your people at work, and just visualize that you're more patient with everyone and everything. Or perhaps more loving, or just more calm. Just visualize that. And every day, just water that vision with attention. Thank you so much. It's been lovely to be with you.